The Dode Fox Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Dode Fox Podcast. I'm Ronnie, he's Paul, and this is our first ever Sunday release of an episode. From Paul and myself, have a very Merry Christmas when it comes. Open the presents, scran the pigs and blankets, and make sure it's chocolate for breakfast. Join the conversation on our socials. We're a Dode Fox Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Coming up on this week's episode, Turgid Tangerines, My Good, Bad and Ugly, Partick Thistle Preview, The Women's Team, live episode recording, our A to Z of Dundee United, On This Day with the Arab Archive, and we'll read out your Christmas lists. It's all coming up on episode 222 of the Dode Fox Podcast.
Hi, I'm Dave Bowman, and welcome to the Dode Fox Podcast. You better be listening.
So welcome back to the award-winning Dode Fox Podcast with Innes Hoos, Paul McNichol, and at Dode Fox HQ, Ronnie Costello. It's like the C word all over again.
Man, it's just got to be. We're doing this on a Saturday. Obviously, it's coming out on a Sunday, which is a first for us. And just because of childcare, is that the C word you were thinking? No, I didn't think it was. And it wasn't anything that rhymes with Noel Hunt either. But it's just due to circumstances. There's another C word for you. We have to do it remotely today.
In episode 222, eh?
I would like to say it's a milestone, but it's just another episode, really, is it, at this stage?
There's
milestones coming up, but at this stage, it's just another thing.
Yeah. Although, like I say, we've got something, because it is, obviously, Christmas Eve as this episode comes out. We have got your Christmas lists. We will read through them later on. Paul was very excited when he came up with that idea this week. And we got some of them. We went back and forward on the actual graphic because Paul gave a suggestion. Then when we put the suggestion, he said no, because apparently we're not allowed to admit we'd like a kiss off of Charlize Theron.
Well, it was Charlie Mulgrew or Charlize Theron, wasn't it? And I could see why we'd probably win that in. But hey-ho. Hey-ho. We went a wee bit more sensible.
And down tools. Doing
a down tools kit. Exactly.
Once again, thank you very much to everyone who stuck in orders for merch and stuff. Everything did get dispatched last week at the latest opportunity, so everyone should have what they have ordered and should have a nice present for Santa tomorrow, if you are listening to this on Christmas Eve. DodeFoxPodcast.com is the all-in-one place website. You can listen back to episodes, read up on some of the guests. You can find episodes really easy as well. The shop is closed. It'll be back open in the new year with, like I said last week, some new drips for everyone. And that is the play, and I will repeat this later on. If you would like tickets for the live episode recording, which is coming up in like 4 weeks' time, there is a waiting list in place that you can sign up to at DodeFoxPodcast.com. We were able to release literally 4 tickets this week, and they were purchased pretty quickly. But if you join the waiting list, you will be notified of when they are available. There won't be loads and loads, but if you would like to get them and come and get involved as we do the mid-season review episode 226 in Clark's on Lindsay Street, that is the place to go. It'll be a normal-ish episode. There'll also be the mid-season review. And then for those alone in the room, there'll be a Q&A with our new podcast pal, Callum Morris. Anyway, rumour mill to get us started, Paul. David Witherspoon's name's been thrown about again this week on some social media pages. He is only contracted at Inverness until January. Whether that's the 1st or the 31st, I've no idea.
Yeah. I saw his name coming up on certain chats that I'm in, but I didn't realise it was a rumour. I thought it was maybe just people, maybe a wee bit wishful thinking going on there.
I think it a rumour.
Well, but is there substance to it? Or as I say, is it just like a wish list? People are like, well, we could do with him. Well, like you could. There's a big list of boys we can do with. But yeah, he'd be a welcome addition. No doubt he's obviously an aging player now, but I think a short-term fix, he could definitely do a job. But then whose spot does he take if he comes in?
I think the big thing's been that there was a lot of doubts on his fitness, and he obviously trained with Dunfermline the whole of summer to get fit, and then Inverness signed him. But again, it was only a deal to January to see how his fitness was, and I think I'm probably right in saying that he's played all, if not the majority of their yeah. games.
That's the way it's. Maybe not 90 minutes, things, isn't it?
But you know. Yeah.
But then, if you're getting a good 70 fair guy like that, then you'd probably take it. I mean, I don't think it'll happen. I'd be really surprised if it happens. But never say never, I guess.
Yeah, and of course the Simon Murray rumor that we spoke about last week. Their mm-hmm. game's off the day, so there'll no be no chance of injury the day if he wants to play.
Good. Good. And the manager will be happy in that. There'll no be any shite to hit a stand and watch. That's perfect for him.
Unbelievable. But that's obviously quieting down, but again, still an interesting one that until it's done, until it's the scarf's above the head, it's very much still in the could happen category, I believe.
Yeah. I mean, if we're going to do business, I hope that it's
early.
I hope that matters. Yeah, I hope matters are already in hand, and I hope it's a case of right, the windy's open, here we go, boom. Let's not drag this on for another 4 or 5 weeks when, like, who knows what the league situation will be by that stage. So I think we could probably all agree that reinforcements are needed just now, whether that's as backups or boys to come in straight away into the starting lineup. So if we can get business done early doors, like we did in the summer, in fairness, like we did get a lot of boys in fairly early. There was a lot of boys choke for some activity on transfer deadline day, but we didn't really get any of that because our work was done. So yeah, I hope it's something similar in the January window for bringing boys in. Get it done nice and quickly.
So it was a trip to Hampden on Friday night, and it wasn't the only game in the Championship. The top two were both playing and both served up turgid, dull draws.
You say that in jest. I think the TV cameras, thankfully for me, because I couldn't make it obviously, but thankfully for me they were at Hampden, but I think they'll be kicking themselves that they didn't head for Fife for that 8
and
goal thriller.
And nobody ever says that.
No. That's something that nobody wants to ever say. That's how nobody says it. But I think the cameras chose the wrong game. I think that's fair to say.
Indeed. A trip to the National Stadium for the first time for some in the squad hadn't played there. It's such a weird thing seeing the pictures before the game of before the game, there was about 400 people in the ground and you were just thinking, why is this game happening here? Like they played last year. I want to say it was Stenhouse Muir.
It was.
Were playing it, right? But small ground. Good atmosphere, bloody blah. Although you could hear the United fans in that last night, it's not the same.
No, but I mean, there would have been a novelty factor ahead.
100%, like but...
United apparently took 1,500 through last night, which is... That's... Like, we're a couple of days before Christmas. That is phenomenal. Like, we are unfortunately, a Championship side. To carry that sort of crowd through there on a Friday night on a game that's on TV in shite weather right before Christmas... It's a remarkable amount of people. But my question to you is, because I've noticed a couple of times, usually with like Scotland women's team, when they're playing at Hampden, the cameras are on the other side of the stadium. What is that all about, Rondo?
Yes, strange.
Is there any reason?
So DUTV were there as well, right? And this is a conversation that come up last week, probably at the game. And Scott and that and Dave and all that, they were talking about going to the game. And to be fair, there was a gesture of, if you want to come, you can jump in. But I was like, it's a Friday night. Nah, you're all right. And I'm glad I didn't. But anyway, they were talking about that. And he said, I think you're on the other side, which I never clicked on at the time. And I was saying to Dave, I said, what does that mean? He says, you know where there's the media bit at Hampden? I was like, above the tunnel and that. He's like, we didn't go there. We're the opposite side. It's like,
the north stand, yeah.
Strange.
Well, it just looks weird because for years and years, when you watch a Scottish Cup final or a semi or a Scotland game, the cameras are on the south stand side, but for maybe because it's a diddy game, they put it over there. I've no idea why it's done it. No idea. But maybe it's just to show the 2,500 fans that have actually bothered their arse to go to the game, because if it was on the other side, it looked like nobody was there. Maybe it's something to do with that.
Because obviously
know.
You see the dugouts and the tunnel and like you say, the fans and whatever, but even like right behind the dugouts, it's empty. Well, it's funny, because of where the subs actually are in the dugout, they're about 10 rows back.
Yeah, it's like they're in the main stand themselves.
Yeah.
It's bizarre.
Yeah.
It's a bizarre setup, but it's just Scottish football to a tee, is it? We've got like a wee used to be amateur team playing at our national stadium that they used to own, but they didn't now, I think. And they've got their Inwee stadium that they kind of use, which is right on the doorstep. It's just madness. Like, what is going on with that, Ronda? Yeah.
It's funny that, you know, you think that, you know, if you're coming through as a footballer, even as an amateur, like you say, but you go into Queen's Park, want to sign you, and it's like, oh, and you know, maybe you're a wee bit unsure. It's like, oh, where do they play? Oh, Hampden.
Oh, no bother. Where do I sign?
That's not bad, that. Yeah, I don't know what's going on with the wee pishy ground outside, but it looks right. It looks like it's done, but there's obviously something
bad now. And it's more than big enough. Like, I think it only maybe holds about 3,000. Well, that was quite a big away crowd last night that they got, and there was only 2,500 at the game. So it's more than big enough to accommodate.
Yeah, yeah. So the top two were both playing. Last night, it was very, I mean, at the end of the day, both come out with the same points, but two very different games, I think, were on display. But down at Hampden to play Queen's Park, a team fighting for absolutely everything, having a bit of turmoil in the background, managers leaving, sporting directors leaving, and then a case of, you know, doing a lot of the right things but no getting the results is basically what they were saying on the telly quite a lot for it. We went down there, two changes to the team. Yeah, in came Tony Watt and Matthew Cudjoe. Out went Christy
Mockery
and Kai Fotherham. Mockery, I thought, was good in the first half last week, fell away. Kai just wasn't really fun for him at all last week and had a bit of a knock, I'm led to believe.
Well, yeah, that was just a way to say that. Like, it wasn't one of his better games. Granted, we said that he was maybe as poor as we saw him play for the first team. But then after the match, the manager obviously came out and said that he was a wee bit injured, like he was not full fitness. So you could maybe attribute his performance to that. So if he was deemed fully fit, which I'm not sure of, I've not really heard any interviews after the game, but if he was deemed fully fit, then it's a strange decision to leave him out, because he's been flying that one game aside.
Yeah. But that was the team to go. Other than that, it was the same bods for last week. And like I'm saying, it was going to take resolute defending for one team to get anything out of the game and turn it up. But again, when you look at what United had been on, you know, we'd lost our first game of the league campaign on the back of, I want to say we beat Ayr, but maybe it was Morton. One of them was, I can never remember.
We beat Ayr 1-0 three games ago. We beat them. That's when the keeper spilled it. Kai was on hand to do what Kai does, accept a gift.
Honestly.
But he's good at it. He's in the right place. He's Johnny on the spot, isn't he? So he's in the right place.
The fact I get Morton and Ayr mixed up that much. Snake it.
They're both shite. Both say the same neck of the woods.
But yeah, that was it. So you watched the game back this morning. I watched it last night. Couldn't bear to put myself through it again this morning, really. But, you know, we certainly started the game with intent to go and do bits and put our thing on the game. Again, chances a little few and far between in front of the goal. But when I look back at when they were showing you the highlights at halftime and full time, again, even early in the first half, you know, Cudjoe sticks one over, he sticks a header over as well. Good chances when you actually break it down to pretty much right in front of the goal.
Yeah.
But disappointing.
Yeah. Well, like my I would sum up my mood about the whole situation just now as a bit flat. I think for the first few minutes we started all right, but then as much as we seemed, because I was managing, I had the iPlayer on my phone last night, so I was kind of, I had more than half an eye on it when I was meant to be enjoying myself at a party, which I did in fairness, but I was still watching the game. And like when I was watching it, you kind of hear commentary, but anytime I kept looking at it, I jokingly say that are we even playing with a goalkeeper tonight? Because we seem to hate either possession, and we seem to have the possession. What do you want to hit? The possession in the opposition's half. But then, obviously, there was a couple of things we'll talk about in the first half. But by the time I got to half time, I was like, "No, really. Like, fair dues. I don't know what the stats will be here, but we've not really troubled their keeper. Like, we should have scored. I would say Cudjoe in the 28th minute. I think when I've watched it back the day, I've noted in there, he's got to score. Like, it's a great ban for Grimshaw. And maybe his strong shoot's not going to ever be hither in the bar, but it's a gilt-edged opportunity, Rondo. He's right in front of the goal. To not even really trouble the keeper, that's a bad end. What else happened? Just before half-time as well. And I've watched it back. I saw it at the time on a phone, on a grainy image, and I thought, that's got to be a penalty. And then the ref gave them the free kick. And as I say, when I'm watching it at the time, no commentary or nothing, I thought, maybe he was offside. Watched it back the day. There's no question at offside that the ref has looked at that situation, that incident, and thought, could you have fouled the boy here? No danger he's fouled the boy. There's no danger he's fouled the boy. It's a penalty all day long. So, I still felt we were poor. Like, I'm not trying to sugarcoat it. I thought that we were really poor. And I say that because we were back to being quite slow and ponderous, and there was a lot of side-to-side passes going on again. But you're getting to half-time thinking, Cujo should bury that. He should bury that chance. And we should have had a penalty. It could have been far different. I mean, it wasn't, and that's the bottom line. Like, we go on about stats all the time. Ah, well, this and that. Ah, but like, it was nothing's up at half-time. So I'm saying it could have been 2-0, maybe should have been, but it wasn't.
I think, though, when you actually look at the first half, for the actual amount of chances that we did have, like, you've got to remember the boy Ferry had a really good save for Holt for the corner. It's a good save. Like, it's a good save. Then you've got the block Tilson's, which is going in. Like, if the boy doesn't throw his body in it, the keeper's not getting near it. You've then got Watts on a... It's not a great... The keeper still has to save it, but then, like you're saying, you've then got the Grimshaw delivery to Cujo when he heads it.
It's a great ball in. It's a great ball in, and he simply has to do better.
Yeah.
He has to do better.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a professional football player. At the end of the day, you're a professional football player. You're going to have strengths, you're going to have weaknesses, but that is a gilt-edged opportunity.
Yeah. And for me, I said it at the time, and I've said it since I've seen the replay, and some people have said, Cujo would have been soft. It's more a penalty than a foul. Against him, it's
I'm
a foul.
Convinced it's a penalty.
Absolutely, it's more a foul on him than it is against him. Put it that way. Like, it's...
I think when I was watching it back this morning, and I thought I'm going to listen to what the guys at halftime are saying, and Michael Stewart was like, "It's a penalty. Like, it's not even in doubt in his mind. It was a penalty." Leanne Crichton was like, "Nah, I don't think it was a foul to either player." And you could maybe make an argument for that. Like, it might just be a tangle of legs. And in fairness to Cujo, very unlike professional football players this day, he didn't stay doing a roll of boot. He had one intention. He was back up and had the bar under control. And the refs bought it, basically. The refs bought it for the defender. So it was disappointing, but we weren't a good first half. What I will say is we were playing against a team who I did not think had any intention on attacking. Like, they were almost 10 men behind the bar at all times, and the boy Payton ploughing a lonely furrow up front at times. But then that's a needs-must situation for them. They're needing points. I mean, it's a great point for them because they're bottom of the league and they've been on a hellish run. They've been conceding goals willy-nilly. So for the top scorers and supposed biggest team in the league to come to your house and bring more fans than you're ever going to have, a point was a great thing for them. And that's, it just looked to me like, for the get-go, that's what they set their stall out to be. And it was certainly working right up to half-time.
Yeah, and it was that way of, they were playing. One disappointing thing was, as soon as the left back got booked, we didn't put the bar down to Cujo enough. Now, we try it sometimes, we couldn't find him with a simple 5-yard pass, and then there'd be occasions it just wouldn't reach or whatever, and that was frustrating because that boy was a walking second yeller because it wasn't his first foul until he got booked, and it's a definite booking. Let's no beat around the bush. And in the second half, he went to do it. I can't mind if it was Fotherham was on at this point, but he went to tackle, and he had to get his mate to come out and tackle the boy because he was already on that yellow. So that's a frustrating one because you're playing on the big pitch, you know, even we 10 men behind the bar.
One thing I noticed about, like, we were dead narrow. Like, Middleton and Kai or Cujo, they should be hugging the touchline, especially on a pitch that says a Hampden. Like, spread them out. Create a bit of space for yourself. But I thought we were really narrow going forward. And poor, but really narrow, and no taking the full advantage of like the situation. Like, it's the biggest pitch in Scotland. Like, use it. Mm-hmm. Stretch them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, like you say, I think coming in at half time, we had, you know, way more than of the ball, the chances and all that kind of stuff. And like, see, you've had a couple of big chances, a couple of big saves as well. Cujo's got to do better, and it's a penalty. I mean, that's the first half alone. You're thinking that's two massive opportunities. I'll credit the goalkeeper with a couple of decent saves, especially for the Holt one, because I thought in that period, I thought Middleton's deliveries were causing carnage. Like, whether it was for corners or crosses into the box, and then him and McMahon were getting a lot in, and let's say Grimshaw, I was screaming at him to cross the bar more than he did, and he'd maybe take the easy option. And then he put that great ball in for Cujo, who put another
good ball in just before half time as well. And Tony Watt was just on his heels. He just watched the defender clear it, whenever he just had a gambled, because the back kind of landed in between two defenders, perfect for a non Russian striker. But he wasn't on the same wavelength, or didn't have the same desire as the defender. I got on the end of it, whatever it was. But that was another great band for Grimshaw, but a wasted opportunity.
Yeah, and like you say, the talk at half time was definitely on the penalty, or the not penalty, the foul against Cujo. I just can't get how he's got to that decision of how he's fouled him.
Well, I'm adamant it was a penalty, like, and there might be some sort of bias in there as well, because clearly I'm looking for a penalty for my team in that situation. But for the ref's point of view, he's behind it. And one of the things that Leanne Crichton said on the TV at halftime was that Cujo's, it looked almost like he was trailing his right leg to get caught, which is, like, he did and he didn't, like, because he's in front of the boy, and there's definitely a tangle of legs. And I would like to think that the emphasis always goes for the striker. Like, I can for a fact, if Cujo was in that same position and we were at Ibrox and he was a Rangers player, I think there's no doubt about it that James Tavernier is 60 seconds later taking a penalty. I just think it was a penalty, Rondo. Like, all joking aside, maybe the ref's off a different angle, but maybe Nohe and VAR cost were there. Because I think, I would like to think anyway that most people would look at that and think, well, okay, if it is a foul, it's the defender foul. I mean, what's the benefit of the Cujo trying to foul that boy? Mm-hmm. Really, what's the benefit? Like, he probably fancies himself to get on to the end of the pass first and nick the bar past the boy, whereas the benefit to the defender is, well, I'll be able to foul him so that he can cut through. It doesn't make any sense that Cujo would look to foul the boy. He might look to be fouled, and maybe that's what the lassie Crichton was saying, but if you look to be fouled and you are fouled, it's still a foul. So in my bias eyes, no matter what way you dress it up, it should have been a penalty.
I agree. But we went in, no breakthrough at half-time. In the other game at that point, Raith Rovers were 2-1 ahead on Ayr United at Starks Park. Ayr were down to 10 men at this point as well. And you probably, most fans at that time just made their mind up that's how that would finish, or they would see the game out and probably get the 3 points. And then automatically your negativity sneaks in and you think, oh, that's pumped now. I'm trying to work out the maths here. Would then be 7 points behind. Oh, it's an absolute shambles.
But you're right. They are things that go through your head during the game, especially when you're watching. In my case, I was watching it on a phone, and I could see the wee scores at the bottom left-hand corner of the screen popping up. And you do the maths. You're like, Christ, if we drop 2 points here and they win, then we're 7 behind now. We just the one game in hand. That's grim. I'm not saying it's insurmountable at this stage, but like, I would rather be in their position. Like, I'd rather have the 7 extra points than be where we are. And they're no struggling to score goals when. Like, we are, but thankfully, like, it didn't come to that on the night.
We did get through. It looked like Glenn Middleton was put through on goal, but the boy Ferrell made an arse save. He's got a score.
Well, I think it was the defender that got back. I didn't even think Midland got a shot off. He was just too slow, or the boy was too quick. Like whatever way you want to look at it. But it's a good bang. It was Sybil that's put the bar through, and it's yet another chance. He's got to do better. Like he's a big strong boy, is Midland. Like hurt him off. Like didn't let him cut across you to get there. Even if he is a wee bit faster than you, he is your body. He is your big arse. Stick it out. But he just didn't.
And then for me, the biggest chance of the game.
64 minutes.
Falls to your number 9.
Yeah, and again, so what Rondo's referring to is it was a good ban to the box. I think there'd been subby by this point, but it was a good ban to the box for Tony Watt because it was Kai that heads it down to Louis Moult, and he turns, and you're just thinking, this is it, this is hitting nothing but net here. And like, unfortunately for us, he's hit it straight at the keeper. I mean, if it's my keeper, you would say it's a good save, but Christ almighty, like, keeper's never letting that in, like, it was straight at him. So that was the gilt-edged chance. Like, that was undoubtedly the best chance of the game.
Yeah, it was a great knockdown as well for Kai, and obviously people are saying, how's he not went for it himself? But they made a good point, actually. I think it was McFadden actually said it. He says, but the pass way behind him. Like, that's a really good wee knockdown. Yeah,
he'd done well to knock it down so accurately to Louis Moult. It was never on for a header on target, I don't think. And if he did, there would be absolutely no power on it because he'd be craning his neck to try and get it on target.
Yeah,
and it's a sitter though, Rondo. It's a sitter.
Yeah, and I think the only real, what could have been the big chance for Queens come after that, the boy Payton at the back post couldn't really get on the end of it. Now, it's not a clear cut opportunity, but
he should score it though.
But he probably should score it.
Should score it. And that came so there was subbies made about 20 minutes to the end. That's when Glass and Mockery came on. Well, I went off Watt and Tilson. Yeah. And I felt it. Like, I could understand why we'd done it. And I suppose at the time, I'm like, right, that's good. We're going for it. Because we hate to go for it. Like, you hate to try and win every game. But I felt like we kind of lost a wee bit of shape when we'd done that. But that chance that you're referring to, that was when they were attacking Dunne or left and Grimshaw's had to foul the boy. I thought at the time, that's a good foul because he was away.
He was.
Again, he was kind of at an angle, but he looked a lot faster than Liam Grimshaw. And if he just had him maybe cut himself towards the goal there, then he was getting a shot away. So I think that's a decent booking to take.
Well,
and then it was for the free kick that the boy missed the chance, boy Payton.
On that, for the booking, I don't know if you would have seen on your grainy footage last night, but if you did watch that bit this morning, it's quite amusing because the camera actually pans to Liam Grimshaw, and Grimshaw's being booked, and it's funny because I'm no lip reading expert, but I'm pretty sure he says word for word, a booking, it's no even a foul.
Well,
I think if you're holding hands with a boy trying to pull him to the deck, I reckon that's a foul and a booking.
I would take a disagree strongly with Mr. Grimshaw and say not only was it a foul, but it was most definitely a booking. But it was a good booking to take because, as I say, the boy was away.
Yeah,
it could have been real dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you say, it was one of the situations that, whether he takes it on the halfway line or where he had to date, it was one of them he had to. Because another couple of steps, he's in the box. He's generally in the box. And, you know, that whole time, I mean, that's the chance, obviously, with Payton. He doesn't really get on it. Because the only thing that actually happened was they'd had a shot for distance that Walton had picked up. And it was the first time I'd seen Walton, I think, the whole of the second half. I only seen him in the first half when he wasn't even a goal kick. I think he took a free kick about 35 yards for his end goal.
Yeah, he didn't hit hellish much today on the night, but
he should have. I mean, yeah, like you say, he should have done better. As the half went on, like you say, we make these changes, and I could see why these changes have been made, because you're trying to put players that are a wee bit more tartan minded on, you know, Declan Glass, Mockery, as we know. And I have to say, it's before Watt goes off, right? So here's one of the, when we're on about VAR, right? I didn't see the replay, so this one's put, I've only seen once. Tony Watt's given offside when he flicks the ball wide to wide, whatever, it would have been further than it was on there. In my opinion, he's never offside. When that ball goes forward, he's never offside, right? That was one. The second one, that's given offside against Chris Mockery is unbelievable. At least a year done. At least.
Like, so, so when that happened, again, as I said, like I can't hear any commentary or nothing when we're looking at it on the phone. It's a busy place where I am, and Mockery gets put through. And then the next thing I can, he's kind of round the keeper, and I'm like, go on, and then he stops. You're like, what? Must have been offside. And then I just needed to see the one replay. He's no offside. Like, he's a yard, half a yard onside. It's, again, it's a big thing that's went against him.
Honestly, that linesman, awfully quick putting that flag up.
He was really quick. Yeah, I mean, they were even joking about it. They were even joking about it in commentary. Oh, he's so quick. But he is. Like, and that's fair enough if you're getting it right. But Christ almighty. He didn't get it right. He didn't get it right with Mockery. The Tony Watt one, it was tight. Like, as you say, I would hate to probably see it again.
Well, listen, that doesn't lead to him going through. He just flicks about behind him, but I'm still thinking, good in. You know.
I know. No, but the Mockery one is it hurt because he did look onside to me. Like, definitely onside. And I think the keeper tried to get the bar off him. I think Mockery tried to go around him, which he did. I mean, you're rolling the bar in an empty net, and we're in a different conversation here.
And then we still had two chances after that as well. Mockery did get denied by the goalie. And I think you're right at the death. Kevin Hall headed it across the bar?
Yeah,
over the
middle
bar.
Middle and corner, and Hall headed it, yeah. But you could always kind of bet on him getting on the end of a corner, and Midland's delivery is usually very good. But he's just put it a wee bit too high on the night, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think Manotin's deliveries again were on the button again this week, and we just kind of convert them. And I think there was one at the end. Fotheringham was at about a tight angle. I didn't think Fotheringham had his best game when he come on, to be fair. I think it was very much...
looked lively. I think we could probably say that. He looked lively, but no, he didn't... not much really came off for him. Like the knockdown to Louis Moult, that was very good, but... No, I mean it was poor, basically, and it was quite a flat performance. How much of that's weather related, I don't know, because it looked like it was absolutely howling through there. But yeah, it's just really disappointing, Rondo, that we didn't pick up the 3 points in that game. Some were our fault, some were the officials' fault, but like mainly us. Like you've got 90 minutes to win a game of football. And we are need luck at times, and I need big decisions and the correct decisions to go for you. But I just didn't think that we were good enough on the night, unfortunately. And for all the possession that we seem to have, there was a lack of quality. There was a lack of end product. But Louis Moult, he's got to score that chance. Cujo's got to score that chance. Like, and that's not even going on about Mockery's possible offside and Cujo's possible penalty. These are two gilt-edged chances that we hate to score. You hate to score these boys.
That we've created enough to win the game. Absolutely.
I would agree with that. But again, like wasteful finishing. Uh-huh. So you didn't always get what you deserve, but we didn't. I can't sit here and tell you that I think that we played well. I really didn't think that we did play well. One thing that I do want to speak about though is last week when we got beat for Wraith, I says to you, I'm staying away from social media. It's just no happening because I could imagine. But because I wasn't at the game, I thought I'm going to go on social media tonight. And it was like, it's grim. But there's a definite difference. And I've thought this for ages because me and you have had disagreements. No arguments, but disagreements about certain things when I've been at the game and you've maybe watched it when you're out the country.
Correct.
But it was like that because I've watched it. I've watched the game on a phone, and then I've watched it back this morning, and I didn't think we were great. Far from it. Like we should have been better all over the park. But some boys are of the opinion, and it's you. It's the boys that were at the game. They were saying, "No, we lack this, we lack that." So you definitely see things differently. And I'm not saying that they're wrong. I'm just saying you see things completely differently when you're at the game, and then when you're watching it back. I mean, I do it myself. When I go to the games on a Saturday, sometimes I will get up and watch it on a Sunday morning, and I'm thinking, Christ, I was stressed around about this time. Why? I mean, there's no reason to be stressed. But to your point, we definitely did enough to create chances and to create good enough chances to win that game. But we've just come up short. And It's a wee bit of concerning. I hate to be honest. I'm a wee bit more concerned than I thought I would be.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, when you do get that different perspective because, you know, you're at the game, you're at that one angle, but then when you get it on the TV, you've obviously, you can get replays and stuff. I mean, at the time, I said it was a penalty at the time. I saw it back, and I thought it was a penalty. And I think at the game, I would say the same. And I'd be even more perplexed about, well, how has that went against them? Because you've no got the benefit of the replay to go, no, that's definitely a penalty. And same with the offside. You know what you're like, even if you're in line with that at the game, there's a wee bit of guesswork goes in, even at the game, because you're no sure. But to watch it back, I'm like, I'm not in with a flag. You need to be 100% sure of what's going on here. You know, and those were the things. But like I say, look, watching it back, watching it last night and seeing, you know, some of the clips back at halftime and full time, there's absolutely no doubt we created enough to win the game. Whether we were good, bad, indifferent, we created enough opportunities to win the game. Like you're saying, two opportunities we should score without even taking into account the penalty, the Chris Mockray. You know, you could have won that game 4-0. And listen, we could have won that 4-0 last night and still go, we weren't a great the day. Well, if we weren't a great and won 4-0, you'd be all right. But we're now no scoring the goals, which is a real frustration.
It sits a lot better, we were, when you win a game, no matter how you play, because that, at the end of the day, that's what's all about. You just want to win games of football. But like the reason I'm a wee bit more concerned is because we're not doing what was carrying us to the top of the league, what was carrying us to all these wins, scoring late goals, sometimes battering teams. Like, we're just not doing that. And in some ways, like, it's kind of, for me anyway, it's kind of mirroring when Robbie Nielsen was the manager in the Championship. We'll come out the blocks flying and we were, I can't mind if we were totally battering teams, but we were playing very well. And then it got to about Christmas time and we started drawing a lot of games, and it was just a bit of an issue. And I don't know if it's like teams have figured out that we like to get the bat to Middleton or to Kai or to whoever's on the wings and try and get down the size and cause havoc that way by creating final third entries. But it's just not happening. And like, you just say, look at the last three games, we've only scored one goal. And we're still the top scorers in the league, albeit only by one goal now. But it's like there's definite signs that that things need to improve and quite dramatically. Even though, like you're saying, well, we could have scored X amount of goals. Yeah, we could have, but we didn't. And that's basically the main thing. We're just not taking our chances for some reason. Is this the part of the season where every team will go through? Like, is this our struggle and then we'll get through this and we'll kick on? I really hope so. But until we get to that stage where we're starting to kick on again, we can't get too far adrift of the team at the top of the league. You can't give yourself too much today.
I think we're all in agreement. It's 2 points dropped, you know, because of, let's say, the things I've said with chance creation and all that there. Decision making at time, obviously, a pass too slow or come inside or over hit a pass or whatever, you know. Again, I don't think we're brilliant in the final third in terms of a killer instinct. But I think when you look at, I don't know what the stats are, right? But Glenn Middleton's probably stuck 10 bars in a box, right? Including the corners, right? And he's had first contacts or what you will, but Kevin Oates, the thing is, it only takes Kevin Oates to go in to mark it. Well, that's fine. Kind of, as long as one comes off. So it's these things that are really frustrating, and you know, they need to, you know, there was a wee last night was probably the first time I've noticed the amount of these wee clipped balls we were trying to do over the top, right? And we were starting to see it when, like, Mockray was getting on the end of them and trying.
But that's his game. He'll make that run past and beyond the striker.
Exactly. But I'm not so sure why we were clipping our when, like, Tony Watt and Louis Moult were on it, you know. And for I don't know what you thought watching the game back this morning, but see, for a lot of that first half, I thought we were essentially playing a 4-4-2 because Tony Watt wasn't that deep.
No, he looked far up the park. But then you could have played a 2-4-4 because they were basically a flat back nine. It was yeah, like again, like we did control the possession, but at the end of the day, like that's something that used to hey, Mero Abern on games when Barcelona were doing it back in 2010 and whatever, their philosophy was, well, if we've got the ball, the other team kind of score, so we're just going to control it. But now that's all been figured out. Like you'll get teams that win 3-0 with 32% possession in games and whatever. So yep. The possession stat isn't it's not what it used to be. And it's not really, none of the stats really, let's be honest, me and you kind of mock XGs and all that shite. But at the end of the day, you've got to score your chances. And we're still creating them. We're not creating nearly as many. Like when you go for Arbroath 6-0 when it could have been 10 to what we got last night. Can we're talking about two gilt-edged chances. Can you could maybe argue there's a handful here and there, but they weren't the great chances, I didn't think. But certainly the two, we Moult and Cujo, they're really great opportunities. But we're just not converting them. And that'll cause problems in the long run if we continue doing what we're doing.
After the bit of a clusterfuck of the cup games back to back, is it right to say at least over the three games, defensively and goalkeeper will be in a bit of a better place? Yes, they conceded last week against Raith, but that's two shutouts now in three games. To get them back after a wee wobble for two. Because you've got to remember, Jack Walton played both the games. It's not like he was chucked in and out, but for him especially, to get back to, which again was a solid foundation at the start of the season, remember? Like they got the credit for it. I know, and like I could say, I know we lost last week. You know, and the stat is, oh, we've only scored one in our last three. We've also only conceded one in our last three. But it's getting that at least them can hopefully get a bit of confidence because everyone was involved in these two games.
Yeah, defensively in the league, I'm no concerned in the slightest. Like I think we're probably going to end the season with the lowest goals conceded. I'd be surprised. I mean, it would be a capitulation if we didn't have it here. But that side of it, apart from the cup games, that side of it hasn't really changed. I mean, we lost a bad goal last week to Dylan Easton, although you could say a moment of magic for him. Like I'll concede that. But last night there was no issues really defensively, I didn't think. Like the boy Payton should get on the end of that. He's done well to pull away for the centre halves and pull on to McMahon, and he's just mistimed it or he's no read it right. But that was really the only troubling aspect defensively last night. But then you were up against a team that weren't intent on attacking. So it should be yeah, you shouldn't look like you're struggling defensively when you've got four at the back and you're against one man up front. But that I don't think that's anybody's concern just now, Rondo. I just think it's like the attacking, something's missing. And it's quite easy to say that something is Ross Docherty, because there's been a lot of stats going about on social media this week saying, well, look, when he plays these games, here's the points haul. And when he doesn't play, there's what you're getting. And it's a marked difference. Like, we absolutely miss his influence, his play, and just him as a midfielder in that setup that we've got. If him and Sybil fitted quite nicely together at this level. And when he's not there, it's there for all to see. Like, we really struggle. Tilson knocks his pan in, but he's no Ross Docherty. He's just no. And we didn't really hate another guy like that, but... And we ain't blowing too much smoke up his arse. Like, we need him fit. We just need him fit. I think we touched on it last week by saying, look, are we just unlucky? And I think you said we probably are, because he's not got a history of any injuries, and he played other games last season.
Only missed 18 games in three seasons for Park. Yeah, he's already missed half of that for United.
Yeah, that's... I mean, nobody could have foreseen that. Clearly, I'm no pointing fingers at anything, but what I'm just trying to say is, when he's no in the side, we don't perform as well as we can do and have done in the league so far this season. So we just hit to get him fit, whether you hit to wrap him in bubble wrap, cotton wool, whatever, just do it.
When you look at, I mean, let's say the league form with him, played 9, 1, 8, drew 1, lost none. League form without him, played 7, 1, 2, drew 4, lost 1. He missed extra time against Queen of the South, and he missed the Falkirk game.
Yeah.
It shows his influence.
100%. Like, he's badly needed. Yeah, he's badly needed in that team. It's as simple as that. Like, we have somebody in Tilson who, as I say, he comes in and he does a job of sorts, but he does not do what Ross Docherty does. I'm not sure we have anybody that does that. And he's your captain. I think his influence is, from what I've heard anyway, it's more than just what he does with the ball at his feet. You know, we just need him in the team. We need him in the team. We've just been so unlucky. He's been unlucky as well with injuries, but we need him back. I'm still not panicking. Like, I'm still not losing my shit about the whole season's going to crumble down around us, around our feet here. But we need to get back to doing what we were doing, and we hate to do it soon, because Wraith are not really showing any signs of slowing up. I mean, I would say it was a blip last night when they've only drawn 4 all. We Air United 10 men, but like, they're clearly still scoring loads of goals. They play, unless they're playing against us, they play a really attacking style. They're putting teams on the back foot. Now, obviously, I must have left them quite open last night to concede 4, but we've just went back to being slow and a wee bit of shite to watch, if I'm being totally honest.
I think when you take like Wraith last night and obviously last week, they've played two totally different ways. They've not played like they did against us last night.
But we've played the same way, just slow and ponderous and side to side, and just no trouble in teams nearly as much as we were at the start of the season.
Man the match.
Probably Sibbald again. It's an easy pick, but he just gives you everything in that middle of the park. But I didn't think there was really any standouts last night, if I'm being totally honest. Thought Middleton, he had some, as you said, he had some good deliveries. But
I think Middleton fit really, dead ball was really good.
Yeah, but well, I was waiting to say, but fair open play, he didn't really.
He's had that contribute. But
he's wasted it. Like, he's no. It was a chance that he turned into no chance because he allowed the boy to get back and knock it out for a corner. So, yeah, probably the easy thing to do is to get it to Sibbald.
Yeah, okay.
Can't get it to Jack Walton, I can't that much.
You're good, bad and ugly.
Well, good. We've just touched on it. Defensively, we're still looking as sound as we have for the majority of the season. The bad, our form has simply fallen off a cliff. We've went from a team playing open, expansive football to a team that is slow, laborious, ponderous, too often taking the easy option and far too often going from side to side. And the ugly, a lack of quality in forward areas and the amount of times that we are wasteful in front of goal is costing us. The leagues are won in mid-season, but unless we find our cutting edge again, we may give ourselves a hell of a lot to do, or worse still, even knock ourselves out of contention.
Paddy Thistle, as Friday Night Football returns to Tannadice. They face Inverness Cali Thistle today, as we're recording this. The other two games that are on Arbroath against Dunfermline and Airdrieonians against Greenock Morton. Paddock then. That big bastard up front, Brian Graham.
Yeah, and we scudded them 5-0 the last time, didn't we? When boys went through Fife to get to Gillespie. But it was... Yeah, it was the Kevin Holt show as well. I scored a hat-trick that day. That was as comfortable as we've been all season. I think they had some chances in the first half. It didn't really feel like it was going to end the 5-0, but then once we got the second goal, we just absolutely battered them. I don't want to say it's a must-win game, Rondo, because like we're not even halfway yet, and who knows? Like maybe Wraith lose next week, we didn't win. You draw, you've actually gained a point. So it's maybe no must-win for that point of view, but it feels like you're really. I said it last week. Like, I really wanted to go to Hampden and win because we just lost, and let's get back on the bike. Let's start pedaling again. And let's get the 3 points. But I think next week we're at home. It's the last game of the year. I'm choking for the 3 points, but we have to play a hell of a lot better than we did last night, in my opinion.
Yeah, Partick beat Dunfermline last week, 2-1. Next week, by the way, on Saturday, it's Ayr against Dunfermline, Inverness against Morton, Queen's Park against Airdrieonians, and Wraith Rovers against Arbroath. And we then go to Smokyville on the second.
Yeah, well, I would have to believe that Wraith are going to win that game next week. So, Now that you've told me that, I'm going to say next week probably is a must win. Mm-hmm. Because I can't see them getting anything less than 3 points. So we can't be falling 8 or 7 points behind, like, in my opinion. I know there's a long way to go, but if the players at Tannadice are maybe starting to feel a wee bit of pressure now for fans that are no overly happy at games, it'll get a whole lot worse if we start falling further back, rightly or wrongly. But that's just the way it will be. There's an expectation, there's a standard that fans expect for a team like United. When we go and play a team like Queen's Park or whomever else in this league, like, there just is, like, rightly or wrongly, there's an expectation.
What is that expectation?
That expectation is that you've got to win this league. Bottom line, that is it. And to get to January, if worst came to worst, we could be 8 points behind. And that's no great. And people will point to the fact that, but if worst comes to worst, that means we've only lost 2 games this side of New Year. I get that. And normally that'll put you in a pretty good spot. However, there's another team that are just running away with it. Like, you've got to at least match that. You've got to. Like, my expectation is to go in and set, certainly this season, because we're in the Championship, we've got to go in favourites every game. And normally, the bookies didn't often get it wrong. The favourites win most of the time. Now, we have won most of the time, but we still find ourselves 5 points adrift. And it's not so much that fact that's bothering us as much. It's the way that we've played the last month. It hasn't been good. And for the last month to 6-7 weeks, you could even argue, it's just not been good enough, and it's got to improve. I don't think anybody at Tannadice needs to tell that. I don't want them to come out and start bullshitting with, like, if we keep playing poorly, I don't want people to come back out and say, well, no, we're not playing poorly, we're doing this. Just win games, okay? Winning games solves ahan. Ahan. No grumbles, no mumps, no moans. Just win games.
Absolutely. I'm assuming the star man in your loan report is Logan Chalmers.
Well, like, I didn't. There's no loan report prepared, but what I do know is he scored last night.
He did.
I think he scored to put them 3-2 up.
Yep.
2-1 up, something like that. And he did. I think he played the Hail match as well. But because we're recording this on Saturday and it is only 1 o'clock, no games have been played. So that is absolutely dynamite and music to my ears. I also don't think that there was any academy games this week, Rondo. So please don't tell me there was, because I've got nothing. Which leads me on to the women's team. As the ladies welcomed Motherwell to Gussie last week for their last match prior to the winter break, it was to prove to be another disappointing Sunday for them. In a game where they created very little themselves, Motherwell were dominating possession and edged in front in the game through a back post header from a corner. It was a poor goal to lose, as the Motherwell player somehow managed to have a free header from about 3 yards out. The second half was a slightly more even affair, but it was the same old story for United this season in that they struggled to create any clear-cut chances and the game would fizzle out with Motherwell comfortably holding on for the 1-0 win. All that means that the team go into the winter break in 9th place. They've played 16 games, winning just 3 and losing 12. They have scored 15 goals and conceded 55. I think it's fair to say that there's plenty of room for improvement in 2024.
Right then, we are off to our A to Z of Dundee United. Paul and I picking a player whose surname starts the letter. We plead our case why this should be in our A to Z. Billy Thompson was awarded T because he deserved to be awarded T. Which takes us, as we jump over you, because, well, there's really nothing, V. I wonder what country most of these people could be from.
I mean, it could be anywhere, really. Hmm. But probably not anywhere, probably the Netherlands.
Yes, indeed. How have you got us looking in terms of honourable or dishonourable mentions?
Well, we could go 2-2-2, like at a push. I could go 2-2-2. So I'm going to dishonourably shout out Timothy van der Meulen. I didn't think he was up to much at all. Was he no previously at Bayern before he came, Hazard? Absolute nonsense, like Bayern Z team or something. And Frank van der Struijk.
Yeah.
Just because we were in the Championship at that time, and he still managed to be honking.
Yeah, he wasn't great, was he?
He wasn't great.
What did he play, like 20 odd times or something?
20 games, yeah. But he, my memory of him is he gave away one of the penalties in the Carmi Bell game.
Mm, he did, yeah.
Yes, 100% he did, because that's my one memory of on that beautiful sunny day, right in front of the United fans. He tried to trap the bar and ended up kicking the boy into the street. Hopeless. Nah, so he wasn't very good. But he probably went back to Holland with an Iron Brew Cup winner's medal, I dare say.
Yes, he did.
Mental.
Honourable mention. Hall of Fame stuff.
I've got to go for Tassos Vinicius.
Class.
Yeah, I thought he was a really good player. Like he's only played 60 odd games, and he was young when he came to us. But he was a good technical footballer. I thought very good player. And any time he scored for us, we didn't lose, Rondo.
No, didn't.
Okay, he only scored 2 goals in 2 games, but like we won both, so that is vital.
Yeah,
and again, like I'm kind of contradicting myself here because this guy also did play in the championship.
I liked him though. I thought he was a good player.
Are you're on board with this then, Nick van der Velden?
Ah, 100%.
Yeah, I think he was a very good player. We got him at the wrong end of his career. Like if I would have liked to have seen him when he was in his 20s rather than when we signed him when he was 52 or 53 or whatever he was. But he was a very good player until we thought that he could play up front on his own against Hibs just after New Year, and he didn't look such a good player that night. It was that wasn't his game. But no, I thought technically with the ball, he was very good, and he was good to watch as well. His goal against Queen of the South first day of the season, tremendous. Like that kind of whetted the appetite for what might be, which never really got fulfilled, unfortunately.
No, it didn't. That leaves us with 2 then.
Yeah, and it could only be Guido van de Kamp and Freddy van der Hoorn. It's got to be between them. And if you've got a gun to my head saying what's going to win it, I'd probably go Guido because he won the cup. Freddie played about 4 times as many games as him and he was a bit of a character, but I just think Guido, for being a cup winner, he's a club hero, the fact that he's got his winner's medal, we were. So
yeah,
I think he might win it this week.
Yeah. It's amazing when you look at Guido's career. I mean, he only played 64 games. Like he comes in, makes his first appearance in Morris Malba's testimonial, then spends most of the 91-92 season fighting Alan Main for the number one jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Then falls out of favour, goes on the transfer list, gets back in when Alan Main gets injured in November 93, plays the Hale season, wins the Scottish Cup.
Yep.
And that actually turned out to be his last game for the club because he had
a contract dispute.
Moved to St Johnstone, fell through, ended up joining Dunfermline, won the title with them, went to Raith, went to Alloa, and finished up his career in 2001. And Freddie van der Hoorn, again, you know, was introduced to fans at Paul Sturrock's testimonial against Real Sociedad. Mm-hmm. Then played in the team for, 5 years, played in the Scottish League Select against Scotland at Hampden. He played for United in the Scottish Cup final, his free kick at the post. He then got a runners-up medal and a red card after the final whistle. And then he actually missed out and won the Scottish Cup final in 94. He lost his place to the side after the 2-2 draw against Motherwell. Because I think he fell out, for what I remember, didn't you? He must have fell out with wee Jim or something. He fell out with somebody. He was bombed out the team. Yeah, because he was bombed out the team and then he was got transfer list and left right after the final. Because he played about, I want to say without the fact in front of me, I'm sure when I read it, he played like 30 games or something that Scottish Cup winning season.
No sure. But yeah, like his time didn't end very well. He's a podcast pal as well.
Yeah.
And hopefully one day we can get Guido on. That'd be cool.
Yeah. So there, it's Guido against Freddie on Tuesday. The live show, episode 226, the mid-season review, will be recorded live on Sunday, the 21st of January. It's an afternoon kickoff. You've got tickets, 2 o'clock. Start doors will open at 1:30, and it's a mix of seating and standing at Clark's on Lindsay Street. Tickets did sell out, but there is a waiting list, like I mentioned at the start. Toadfoxpodcast.com, head to the tickets tab, and then you can join the waiting list when any other tickets do come available, and we are hoping to have some more available. Basically, it's an email out. Be first in to secure your bits. There will be a raffle that will include some signed bits and bobs, some Toad Fox goodies. And we have had a couple of companies get in touch with some prizes as well. So it's going to be good. And again, the ticket profits and indeed all the profits from the raffle will be shared between fans supporting Food Banks Dundee and the display team as well. So if you're coming along, bring a spare fiver, tenner, 20, or if you're Paul, 50 quid, and get your raffle tickets and you can win some goodies. And like we said, the Q&A on the day is just for the people in the audience, and that'll be with our new podcast pal, Callum Morris. So again, if you want to join the waiting list, because tickets will be made available again before the event, toadfoxpodcast.com and click on the tickets tab. So we sent a post out on our social media yesterday asking for what should be on your Christmas list for Santa. Now, we, of course, were asking for 3 points, Toad Fox hoodie, a new striker, and a Tools Dune playset. But we wanted to find out from you what you wanted. So, Paul will load up the ones that are on Twitter or X or whatever else, and I'll jump on the other ones and see what there is. Steph says on Instagram, I heard a rumour that the Gianfranco rumour isn't going to start for a change this transfer window. So there's no Gianfranco on their Christmas list. Addington Arab is looking for some world peace. He's looking for goodwill to all women and men, excluding governesque zombie types. 3 points and lots of goals versus Partick Thistle during his annual Christmas pilgrimage to Tannadice, his spiritual home, and lots of deluded D Stadium lols. Now, I did hear a rumour, right, this week that they're getting kicked out of their training complex, right, because they've made an arse of that. And that's about...
How was it knowing the rumour, Mel, then?
Right, because it's they didn't deserve that. Deserves to get thrown in. And you can just imagine they've went, oh, shit, what we're going to do? Somebody going to drop something that'll never happen and go and post it online for Abdi to wet their knickers at. And that's exactly what happened.
The phony macaroni.
It's horrible. And the guys from the Football Beer and Punk Rock podcast look for 3 points for us to choose the pre-match playlist 1 week. You can speak to United about that one. And for Derek Adams to continue to be an absolute flump for the rest of the season. Loads of vinyl, loads of beer, taps off, done.
And that's for Instagram?
Yes.
Okay, so for Twitter, we've got the Cheesecake Queen for Hamilton that we've never yet saw this, the evidence
still
of this
waiting.
Cheesecake.
Still waiting.
So Leah Smith would like a 24-hour long Tony Watt vlog based on Glenn Middleton's daily life. It's a reasonable request.
There'll be a few people in that queue.
There will be, yeah. Oddy Arab, only thing he's wanting is a guaranteed title win.
And
so am I. So, man, Barry Morton, a hard-as-nails battering ram of a striker. And I put the word nails in there.
Take it.
Scarf Jim, some miracle grow for my big napper. How dare he? What about your big napper, Rondo?
No, wrong with mine. Bald is beautiful.
This is the reason that, well, no, this next live show, obviously, because we're giving that money to good causes, but... In future, if there's live shows, it goes towards the Get Ronnie and Paul a Turkey Fund for to get some new hair and teeth. So, I need no miracle grow, Jim.
What about the extension thing you were talking about? Is that still in the plans?
No, that's when we fill the Caird Hall. That's when Davey Neary calls me back and answers his phone. It's fine. Lucy Flight would like a new podcast channel. I'm deeply offended.
Arsehole.
But that's fine. That's fine. Michael Craig, to stop the stupid goal kicks. That is all. That is the tweet. That's fair dues.
You're on board with that, aren't you?
1,000%, yes. Ben McDonald, a bidet for his arsehole.
Nice. That would be class.
Decent request, yeah. Decent request. D-Mort, physio and psychotherapy departments. I'm assuming he means for United. Nothing personal use there or nothing like that. Chris McLean, minimise penalties to the Rangers. Same want aggression against the bigger teams as we have against the Diddy teams. And a new Toad Fox podcast mug for work.
Nice. We'll sort that out.
That's fair enough. We'll try and do something like that. And one of my favourites, well, two of my favourites, Keir Skinner, a king rib supper.
Oh, not a king rib.
For Christmas.
King rib or a mock chop. Oh.
Just wrap it in an old newspaper. There we go. But Patrick Joyce has left with a wee, a ref that'll blow the whistle at 90 minutes in a Raith Rovers game. Bosh.
Over on Facebook, by the way, Andrew Ross says, a trip to Turkey's finest hair transplant clinic.
Yep.
Is that for himself?
We're all going over. Well, I mean, it could be. It could be, but see if we can get maybe a 3-for-2 deal. We can ahead.
And Matt Watson has got a few things on his Christmas list. See what you think of these, Paul. Sadat to be fit and understand the offside rule.
Well, baby steps. Let's just get him fit.
Young players like Glass, Mockray, Miller, Thompson to find and use the gym so they stop getting pushed about as much. I would argue Miller Thompson's been the star of the loan report this season.
Yeah, well, and there's a conversation to be had. Like, do we bring him back? Do we not? That'll be one to watch in January.
He's also looking for Aina and Niskanen back on loan.
Ronnie broke his neck shucking that big head of his there.
And a Saudi buyer for the club or half dozen of the first team squad. David Steele, we should be raiding the English leads for decent strike partner for Mole, a permanent contract for Jack Walton, a younger, less fragile version of Doc to act as understudy and a new owner, question mark. Steve Conway, very simple, he's looking for a fucking miracle.
Excellent, yeah.
Tim Arbuckle, 3-1 oil for the Dock, a night out for Mole and Mrs. Mole so you can find his mojo, goals, points, a better January than last, please, I'm not asking for much. David Connors looking for somebody to buy Barragiti. Shabir Aslam is looking for Kate Beckinsale and Ajara Nutella. Now if they're joined up, I'm finding that weird. And I took the jam and custard in the swimming pool anyway. And Robbie Thompson, Santa, just two presents for me. United to win the league and to stop pushing about and pushing about, and for Scotland to get further than that mob for south of the border in the summer. Mon the shed.
That would be decent. That would be two decent requests there. A nice wee win, and let's do better than them.
It would be. Thank you very much to everyone who gets involved in some of this daft things we like to fill a wee bit of time with. On this day, then, in association with the Arab Archive, preserving the history of Dundee United Football Club since 2006, the 24th of December is our focus today. I've got two games and a birthday for you. First up, Hibs were the visitors to Tannadice in 2011 as United started in energetic fashion, but somehow went behind to the man who looks like a thumb, as Lee Griffiths put the spoon burners ahead midway through the first half. The second half started the same way, and podcast pal Sean Dillon ended up in the book after a touchline altercation with, you guessed it, the boy who looks like a thumb. Then United were level. GMS went on a Maisie, gave it to Armstrong, he fed Johnny Russell, and our podcast pal rounded the goalie to make it 1-1. A podcast pal then provided the cross for a second. Paul Dixon struck it in and right on John Daly's naba as he made it 2-1. The Irishman then made it 3 after GMS stuck him clean through, and the current manager of St Patrick's Athletic made no mistake, and it was 3-1 the good guys. Merry Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
We had another home match on Christmas Eve in 2016, if you remember. This time we welcomed St Mirren to Tannadice in the Championship. Jack Ross, mind him? It was him. He had his team well up for the match, but it was that big, Glaikit-looking, rainbow-flicked bastard, Col Donaldson, that made a complete arse of receiving a Dixon throw that allowed John Sutton to score. Now, I don't know if you remember this, Paul.
But we were going for a record.
Yes, we were. And he was then subbed on, and he made a complete arse of it.
Yep, he did. To the surprise of no one.
Right. Anyway, a minute later, beautiful Tony Andrew put one across the 6-yard box. Scott Fraser slammed home the equaliser. He then turned provider to someone called Simon Murray, who headed United into a half-time lead. And ultimately, the 3 points in the end. Further good news shortly after full-time, Hibs drew at home to Raith, which meant we would go top of the league at that time.
And shouted it through the rooftops.
Still didn't win it.
Mm-hmm.
Birthday mention today. A £50,000 signing. He joined on the same day as his Chester teammate, when nine tays, Ian Jenkins, in 1998. He made his debut against Motherwell. He played in the next two games, then dropped in the reserves and was never seen again. Hopeless. Turning 51 today, happy birthday to Julian Alsford.
What a shite day ahead of birthday. Honestly. My brother Ian's birthday is the 27th of December, and I shite always think that's a bit shit. It really is. I give him one slipper on Christmas and the other even 2 days later. But the 24th, I mean, that's grim, is it? But he deserves it because he was honking.
Yes, he was. He absolutely was. Anyway, that is it for this episode. An early episode, of course. And once again, on behalf of us both, have an absolute very merry Christmas. We can't promise you'll get everything that was on your Christmas list that you sent to us, but we will absolutely try our best. Once again, we're at Dode Fox Podcast on social media, online at dodefoxpodcast.com. Have an absolute brilliant Christmas, Boxing Day, and whatever it is. And we'll be back before the new year as we face Partick Thistle at Tannadice on Friday night. How do you think we'll get on? Have a great week. Stay safe. And don't forget to wash your hands and your arsehole.